This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We are streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980, where you see television and radios. Clint Yates on a Wednesday, because I'm not here on Friday. That's how that's going this week. Clinton, of course, the host of Clinton and Friends nationally each and every morning. You can check that out on the ESPN Radio app or on the ESPN app, because now y'all just have one app, one giant company, one singular app.
It's like one big refrigerator with one big freezer right next to it. That's how I like to think of it. Sure. In the garage. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, you can put it that. You guys are in the house quality. Come on.
Yeah, but I don't like that much. I don't need that much machine in my house. You know what I'm saying? You got the beer fridge, and then you got the storage fridge freezer.
You're saying the size, that's a garage size. Yeah, no, y'all. There's a lot of tentacles on the.
That's what I mean by that.
ESPN
metaphor.
Yeah, I gotcha. Okay, now that we've got that straightened out, let's see if we can fix the NBA in the next 9 minutes or so.
Right.
I know you've been talking about this on your show, and there is. The reality that the NBA is continued to grow in terms of the TV contract, so it's making more money than it ever has. But ratings are down. All-Star Weekend was pretty universally panned again. So for me, it comes down to the fact that there was so little basketball. That was the thing that was incredibly frustrating, was I actually wanted to watch some of the basketball, from the Rising Stars to the actual game, and between commercials and other shenanigans, there was so little basketball. But when you look at this problem, is this a All-Star Weekend problem? Is this an NBA problem? Is this a basketball problem?
These are two separate things, and I think one of them is a non-problem. The All-Star Weekend thing is a problem. I would agree that the production on Sunday did not meet the level that it had been the previous 2 days. Friday and Saturday weren't that bad. But whatever that game was, just completely sucked all the air out of the room. I was not impressed. I had it on. No sound, and I never felt compelled to turn the sound on. And that's not a good sign. You know what I'm saying? Because I saw too many people talking, too many performances, and I'm not some old fogey. You know what I mean? I just didn't want that at that stage.
I'll say, the Pass the Mic deal they did with E40 and Too Short, that was good. If that was a singular halftime show, I'm fine with it. The problem is, it was one of eight things, and the introductions take 30 minutes.
Yeah. I was not in the mood for the full dim sum course. I wanted one meal, and we got all of that stuff. So that's one issue. But the issue about NBA and its play as it relates to basketball as a whole, I think is a fascinating one, specifically that I wanted to talk to you, Craig, about, as you, a man of bodies and kinetic energy. And I mean this honestly, because there's a certain part of the American athlete that we have solved for the basketball player. Every player, effectively, somewhere between 6'5 and 7 foot, long and rangy, handles and can make a shot. The players themselves are all effectively the same guy in a different way than it was 25 years ago, when different body types, different styles of humans, styles make fights, as they say in the boxing world, they were all a part of the melange. Because of the development of the American athlete, we've been kind of making the same type of person. And so now in the NBA, of course the game is all the same type of shots and the same type of things. All these guys are effectively the same NBA 2K creative player. So I don't blame the athletes themselves in terms of that element of strategy. Now, is there an element of effort that involves like NBA weekend? Sure, but I don't even really care about that. I just think that if you've watched basketball over the past 20 years at all levels, you could see this coming. 50,000 dudes named Jalen running around an AAU gym on a weekend, all with broccoli head haircuts. Of course, after those guys are making it to the league. These are the only people playing basketball anymore, to some degree. And I don't mean that pejoratively. I'm just saying that what we're doing with specialization, what we're doing with all of the AAUification of basketball, this is what it leads to at the top level in this particular country. And globally, that is mimicked, and you see what you see. This is not that surprising to me. The question is whether or not the core fan of NBA life, of you know, the NBA, still enjoys that. And I think that's a different question, Craig.
Well, the answer is going to be no, because people like personalities, right? People like things that are unique. Like, part of the reason Stephen Curry is so popular is because he's different. Like, it's yeah. Like, oh, the 6'3 guy. But the same token doesn't have to be the 6'3 guy. It could be the 7'3 or more accurately 7'4 guy in Wemby. It's like, oh my God, look at this guy. It's part of it is the greatness, but part of it is the uniqueness of what they do. And I like, this becomes a really interesting chicken and egg discussion of was it a bunch of 6'5 dudes named Jalen running around, or is that who the NBA decided that was the best thing? Like, they're searching for all of these guys that can play multiple positions defensively, that are good enough offensively, like can shoot it, create a little bit, are athletic slashers. And by the way, they're all trying to more or less play homogeneously.
Yeah.
Like, NBA basketball outside of a few select cities is we're hunting layups and threes, and it mostly looks the same in how they're doing that with some of the ball screen actions and the way they're defending those actions. Like, if you have a unicorn like Jokic, well, yeah, Denver's offense runs a little bit differently. Sometimes it's not that differently. It's just they invert some of the pieces, but even that is unique enough. That's like, oh, this is different. This is fun. This is cool.
Right.
But I think, like, because not only from a strategy standpoint has it become an extremely homogenous game where you're not saying, okay, we have this incredibly unique talent, how do we maximize it? It is, we think this is the best way to play basketball. How do we fit the pieces into it? Then everyone's looking for the same exact kinds of pieces too. And that is probably not great for the game, because then you wind up reverse engineering those pieces at the youth levels, and everyone is so the same that they have the same name and the same haircut.
This was a problem in baseball. This is a problem across a fair amount of sports sometimes. Basketball is just more intimate. There's less players that are good at it at the top level. So if you don't get those that variance in personalities, it's much easier to see. You know what I'm saying? But it boils down to this for me. The game has legitimately evolved. And that is something we do have to take seriously. Whether or not the style of play is one thing, is desirable is one thing, but like, Craig, you know this as well as I do. Everybody can shoot in the NBA. Everybody. Like, the shots go down. That was not the case 25 years ago. You did not have 15 effective dudes on a roster who could all get buckets. And like, we talk about these funny bits where guys like Brian Scalabrine go face off against D3 college athletes who think they could beat him, and he smokes him 15 zap, and you're like, yo, man, that's the reality. The skill level is so much higher that if you don't change any of the other constraints, and frankly, officiating and things like that start to become more lenient towards people that are putting the ball in the bucket, you can't be mad at the basketball players. You can be mad about the attitude. And I tend to agree with you. There's only a certain amount of places that are not sort of doing the sort of money ballification of the game, and it's obvious, but to me, there's an inevitability about all this, Craig, that makes it very difficult for me to be mad at any single one person. This is just what basketball looks like now. And I know that because I've been watching it develop like this in front of my eyeballs, not just on TV,
right,
for two decades. You know, that's just
for
what
sure.
It is.
For sure. And I think that like, one, you're always going to have then guys stand out, right? Like, Luka becomes undeniable and he plays differently, right? And you have Jokic, and you're going to have like a Cooper Flag that comes in and you're like, oh, this dude, okay, this dude can do all the other stuff that the other guys can do, but he does it better and he's bigger and he's stronger. And like, he'll be the next guy, and he'll be battling with Wemby for hopefully a decade and a half, who is 7'4" and unique. And there's a great quote. I don't know if you've started watching Court of Gold yet.
No, but Netflix. I'm going to start. I've given a homework assignment to my radio team. We are getting on that. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we watched the first two episodes last night, and there's this great quote. I think it's in episode 2 from Wembanyama, where he goes, yeah, about 4 or 5 years ago, I stopped trying to fit in because I realized like that's not where I was going to be special. He was like, I was different, so I decided I was going to be different. Hmm. And the way that he trains, the way that he treats his body, the way that he approaches the game is very, very different, and it works obviously tremendously well for him. And so there's always going to be outliers that are special and that can carry a team in a different way. And you hope that those talents land in a place that fosters them, that says, this is different. But I think most people are going to try to chase that same thing. And, you know, that's what I wonder about a team like the Wizards. Like, they're saying, okay, we have, like, we're going to chase big, long, athletic. We're going to chase positional size. We're going to chase athleticism. We're going to chase skills that are rare, and then see if we can develop the parts of the game that we know work. Like, from a strategy standpoint, I actually don't think that's a bad idea. But then what how tweakable is that if you land Cooper Flagg in 2025, or 2025 in the draft, to say, like, now we're going to take these skills that we've been building. We've told Alex Saar, we don't give a rip if you shoot 18% from three this year. We want you to take them because we think eventually that's going to turn you into a 35% three-point shooter. But then once it's time to win, are you able to craft the pieces into the right roles? And that's what makes a great basketball team, the pieces actually fitting together.
I also think there's an element of that that speaks specifically to the district and the style of the game legitimately in terms of the years that we've seen. People talk all the time about how, oh, the Wizards are garbage, DC's a bad basketball town. No, it's not. All right, but the basketball is not happening at the NBA level. The basketball happens all over the place, from the youth level to the college level, on men's and women's sides. Is that formula palatable to fans who know the difference in DC is a legitimate question. I hate to keep returning to John Wall, but the reason why he's so important is because he was such a unique actual basketball player,
right,
that fans were willing to accept that maybe this team isn't going to lose or win a lot or necessarily break over whatever hurdles they can, but we like watching this human play basketball. Is that something that will ever be attainable again for the Wizards? I don't know. And those are the kind of special sauces that are very difficult. Your Ja Morant, you mentioned Jokic, you mentioned Wemby. People that look different in some ways are worth more than people that you can just assume are better. From a different type of marketing standpoint, if winning is not the only thing you've got in mind, and we know for some franchises, it's not.
Well, think about who's sold sneakers over the last decade, right? Like Kyrie Irving, the way that he plays is so unique. And that's the thing, right? They call them signature shoes. Who has a distinctive signature? Kyrie Irving does. Steph Curry does. LeBron James does. I don't know how successful Giannis's shoe has been. But like, Giannis is the jumbo sized, incredibly unique version of this player that we're talking about that can do a little bit of everything, for sure. But I also think, I'm glad you brought up the women's game. I think this is part of the growth of the women's game. The distinctness of styles of like Asia Wilson versus Caitlin Clark versus Kelsey Plum versus, obviously
a Juju Watkins or a Paige Beckers.
For sure. But like, Nafee is having her moment now as she goes and crushes it at Unrivaled, creates a league so she can dominate it. I think that is a huge factor in the women's game. And like, obviously, you know, there's a million factors that go into Caitlin specifically, popularity, but she is having the Steph type of impact because we've literally never seen people shoot 30 footers in the women's game like this. Like, there is an undeniable base of basketball uniqueness and signature play that is the center of her popularity, even if there is then a bunch of branches off of that tree. And so I think that the fact that the women's game is still less homogenous, even though I think that there's more, like, the coaching level is getting higher and higher and some of the strategies elevating as more money has gone on to that side of things, I think that is a huge factor and something that the NBA needs to find a way on a signature way, you know, a signature basis to get back to.
I totally agree. And here's the last thing I'll say about it. We talked a little bit about this on the show. I went to see UCLA versus USC. Juju Watkins was playing in that game at home. She went off. Had 8 blocks from the guard position. If you would pay your cash money to walk into the building and look at these people do their thing with their eyeballs, you've got a good product. The winning and losing and who's on the shirt is one thing. That is for trolls on the internet. But if I were an executive in sports today, that would be my number one goal. Star power matters because the sporting is not something you're going to see everywhere. And if the personal experience can make you a different person when you leave than when you got there, that's your goal. And that's what's ultimately going to make you popular well more than winning and losing. Because in some towns, that just doesn't really matter. And that's fine by me, you know?
Yeah. The caller that said that dunk should be worth 3. Why do they have more of a point than I want them to?
I mean, dog. We've been talking about, you know who tweeted me back about that?
Who did?
The DA, David Aldridge, said he didn't hate it. That was a showstopper, Gregory, for me.
Yeah, for those that missed it, on Clinton Friends, he had a caller that called in and said, dunk should be worth 3. And I like that idea. Like, once I started thinking about it more, like, we could have a whole 30-minute discussion on how that actually works. But on a baseline level of, like, let's reorient the game towards the rim, don't hate it.
Don't hate it
don't
at
hate
all.
It. Clinton and Friends mornings on ESPN Radio. Check it out there. Still obviously on television, writing for Antscape and ESPN.com as well. And you hear him weekly here on The Hoffman Show. Thank you, my friend.
Appreciate you, Gregory.
That is the most normal end of an interview we've ever had.
Goodbye.
Bye, Clinton. All right, Anthony was listening intently to that conversation as a guy who's grown up in the DC hoop scene. We're going to chop it up more about the basketball of it all next. It's the Hoffman Show. We're on the Team 980. We're always live as well on the free Odyssey app. We're streaming live on YouTube, too, at the Team 980. Wrapping up the show, actually, in about 20 minutes because we got Georgetown Hoops tonight here on the station. But real quickly, Anthony, you were listening in on the conversation with me and Clinton. Clinton and me, if you want your proper grammar, as we're just making fun of the fact that kids don't want to do anything in school. I'll be a good example for the youths. The point is, Anthony, you were listening to that conversation about kind of the state of basketball, really in America, starting at the youth levels and how that's infiltrated the NBA. And is that at the core of, you know, the NBA's declining ratings and the attitude towards the All-Star game and all that kind of stuff? As someone who lives in that world, you do a lot of work for Capital Hoops and have over the years. You're around youth basketball. You came up in DC's youth basketball circuit not that long ago as a player. You didn't play in college or anything, but like, you played in high school, the whole deal. So, like, what did you make of those observations from, I guess Clinton and I now qualify as the two old guys if you're the other one in this conversation. Ugh.
I'm not going to lie. So I was at a game yesterday. I went to go watch Carroll versus O'Connell at Archbishop Carroll. And some of the guys that Clinton was describing, the guys with the curly hair, fairly light skin, really like to shoot threes.
All named Jalen.
All named Jalen. They had 3 of those on one team, and actually I was at the game with one of my best friends, and all he was screaming from the stands was, they want to shoot threes. And every time, you know, one of those guys got the ball, what did they do? They end up shooting a 3, end up making it, and that ultimately, you know, helped them win the game. But the fact that, you know, he's screaming that, he knows the scouting report, and I want to say that was his first or second time seeing O'Connell all season long. It's not like he goes to every O'Connell game. So the fact that he had that read on those kinds of guys is just like very telling of where we are, you know, in the basketball world. And it's I'm not going to say it's sad because, like, it ultimately helped him win the game, but we see the game more and more
moving
away.
That's not what the
away.
Game was designed to be.
Yeah, it wasn't.
Like, that's the thing. Is the game was designed geometrically to get to the rim. Yeah. Like, before the three-point line, back in the day, before I was born, I'm not that old, the point was to get as close to the basket as possible because that was going to be the easiest way to score, and every shot was worth 2 points. And then they decided to add this crazy three-point line. There have been some pushes for it. You know, the ABA has it. It's new. It's exciting. And in the first bunch of years of the NBA, when they added, like, not a lot of guys took a lot of threes. It was much more of a novelty item. And now it was like, eventually, you know, it was really like the Popovich and the Spurs, right? They figured out, like, oh, this three is worth more than 2. What happens if we shot more of those? And, like, oh my God, if we make 33% of our threes, we get more points. Or if we shoot 34% of our threes, we get more points than if we make 50% of our twos. Cool. let's do that. And then that coincides with Steph just breaking the entire geometry of the game in a way that was new and exciting and fun. And now what I think you're getting is this generation of kids that grew up watching Steph and Trey and like these guys, but also Brooke Lopez, a big who's firing 30 footers. And so that's why the, you know, jokes aside, when that caller called in Clinton Show and was like, what if we made a dunk worth 3 points? I was like, we're on to something here, because it would change the dynamic of the game. Now, teams already hunt dunks and threes anyway and free throws. Those are the most efficient way to score based off the percentages and everything. But generally speaking, like if you could make it so that it was really extra worth it to get that dunk, to get that layup, to get something inside the paint and reorient the game, like how does that change the strategy? And I think that would be a very interesting thing to do. Or just how do you generally get the game to look like what we want basketball to be? Because while what we're watching is like the strategy that we're watching, like to your point, those kids shooting threes for Archbishop Carroll, like they're trying to win the game. And sometimes, and this like, it's funny because this actually just reminded me of like another thing in terms of youth development. In certain countries, they ban keeping score. They do it some here, but they do it like once you're like six, they're like, the kids are counting anyway. But in like, I think it's Denmark or Norway, like one of the Nordic countries, they don't do it till you're like 12, 13, because they don't want you focused on winning the game. And you're like, oh, that's loser talk. And it's like, no, it's teach you how to play talk. Because when you're nine, the way to win a basketball game is to throw the ball to the kid who's had his growth spurt first. That's not actually developing good basketball players or good basketball. And so you're always going to find ways to try to hack the rules and create a competitive advantage. And the problem is like the way that is best designed to strategically win, and thus the way players are trying to build themselves up so that they are appealing to future NBA general managers to try to actually win, is not the thing that people watching, the consumer, actually wants to see. And that mismatch of what the business wants and what the competitive side wants is eventually going to come to a head. And I don't really know when or how, but like that's kind of what you just described, is that all the way down at a high school basketball game of, yep, nope, they're going to shoot threes and it's ugly basketball, but that team won because they were good at it.
But how much of the blame can analytics get? Because I feel like that's ultimately why we are where we are now.
But all analytics is data. It's a fancy word to try to make fun of nerds.
Yeah, but the fact that, you know, Mike D'Antoni, you know, in the early to mid 2000s was just like, all right, we're going to shoot threes, and, you know, because threes are going to count more than twos. And that actually ended up working for the Suns. It ended up working for the Rockets. It proved to be, you know,
right,
very
but like
valuable.
At the same time, in the 80s, without the 3-point line, or now the heaviest, like, or heavier 3-point line, your team scored in the 140s.
True.
So, like, I mean, the guy, it wasn't like as soon as they introduced the 3-point line, Kareem's scoring record went down. It took LeBron 20 years. And he's not even that great of a 3-point shooter. Like, he's had tremendous stretches and has obviously benefited a ton from the 3-point line. He's had way more 3-pointers than Kareem ever did. Mm-hmm. But, like, we are talking about, like, is there another way? Could you find a way to be so ruthlessly efficient from two that it's worth not taking as many threes? Like, eventually someone's going to figure something out. There will be a player that is worth it, that is so dominant. And maybe it's Wemby. Now, Wemby can shoot threes, which is what's terrifying. But maybe San Antonio builds an offense. It's like, if we can get Wemby standing next to the rim, he's unstoppable. We can score on such an obscenely high percentage of possessions,
yeah,
that your three at 35% isn't enough to keep up with our two at 75%. Mm. So who knows? We'll see. Or they find a way to defend the three better and bring that percentage down. Like, there will be zigs and zags and adjustments and all that kind of stuff. But certainly right now there is a mismatch in what is effective to win basketball games and what teams are trying to do because of that, and what consumers actually want to see. And I think that infiltrates so many of our basketball discussions.
Last question. Do you want to take away the 3-point line?
No.
Okay, just making sure.
But I'm more open to it than I've ever been before.
I was about to say, it sounded like you were, Craig.
Like, no, I don't think at this point you'd do that.
Okay.
Like, we're not going to have a 40-point, 3-point era from 1985 to 2025 or whatever it is. But, like, I do think, it is worth remembering that they made that kind of, they, like, the 3-point line didn't exist, and all of a sudden 1 year it did. And like that kind of change in the NBA is not unprecedented. It's happened before. Yeah. All right, when we get back, we'll quickly wrap things up with real things real people said into real microphones. Anthony, you know what just happened to me? I just got a big Friday feeling.
You got a big Friday what?
I got a big Friday feeling because I realized I got 6 minutes of talking left. And then next time I'll see everybody be in Indianapolis next Tuesday for the combine.
Are you rubbing it in? Are you teasing me, sir?
No, neither. I'm just stating a fact about my life. You're allowed to go on vacation, and I'm not going to guilt trip you for it. Actually, I probably will because I think I have, and I don't want to be a hypocrite. But next time, I'm not going to give you a hard time for it. I'm just going to be like, you know what? I want you to be happy, which is something I think I've also told you when you've left me. But I got a trip to Phoenix, and then I got a trip to Indianapolis. I'll be broadcasting from the NFL Combine during that trip to Indianapolis, so very much looking forward to that. As for the rest of the stuff, today, housekeeping, if you missed any part of the show, including our chat with J.I. Halsell on the NFL salary cap at 5 o'clock, chat with Jesse Dougherty on his great story in the Post on the changing landscape of college sports, or our basketball discussion with Clint Yates, it's all available in the podcast feed and soon will be available on demand on YouTube too at Craig Hoffman. You can also, of course, rewatch the entire live stream, or fast forward, click around on demand style at the team 980. Tomorrow and Friday, Linnell is in, so adjust the volume on your radios accordingly. And other than that, Anthony, anything else in particular that you know you guys got planned the next couple days? Doc's in on Monday. Anything in plan? Or you guys you're just along for the ride?
Yeah, I'm just along for the ride, man, with the youngest in charge.
Yeah. Is there any? Here's a fun one. Is there anything in particular you look forward to when I'm out? I know mostly you're like, oh boy, my whole day's changed. Different vibe. Not to say it's better or worse. You do. I think we enjoy working with each other. Is there anything you look forward to when I'm out? You're like, don't have to worry about that for Hoffman today.
I mean, Linnell can be unhinged sometimes. So I think there's some comedic, I guess, aspect to it. Not laughing at him, but more so just.
With him?
Yeah, I guess with him.
No, you're laughing at him.
Sometimes he thinks it's funny, though. Sometimes he does.
Sometimes it's a with him. Sometimes it's an at him.
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough.
Because he really gets very, very, very passionate. And he calls you the Prince of Passion, but he's a very
That's the funniest thing to me. Most of his nicknames are terrible. There is none worse than me. He is a man who says, I am the youngest in charge. So youngest, you would think prince. He is a man who literally cannot control his own passion for talking to a microphone about sports. And he calls me, someone who's probably the most level-headed sports talk host in the entire city, the Prince of Passion.
Yeah. So
I had some – look, we all explode sometimes. But I would say my holler rate – I don't know. Sheehan's pretty level.
Yeah.
Certainly not Chris Russell.
He can get up there, though.
Yeah. I mean, look, we all can.
Yeah.
We all can. All right. With that, it's time to close out this here edition of the show with Real Things Real People Said into Real Microphones. We take you live with KTLA-TV in Los Angeles to the most dangerous intersection in the neighborhood.
See Hoover Street here. Officials say it's one of the most dangerous streets in all of Los Angeles. And now...
Yep. That was a live report on the most dangerous street in the neighborhood in Los Angeles in terms of car crashes. And during the report, there was a car crash, which was a hit and run. As one of the cars sped away.
That is actually so, like, the timing could have been more perfect.
It feels fake. As far as I know, it is real. Like, KTLA is real. That's a real station, the whole deal. It's the kind of thing local news reports on. It feels fake.
Yeah. Like it was staged or something, but it's real.
Speaking of real... if you haven't watched Court of Gold yet, the new documentary on the Summer Olympic basketball tournament, this moment from Kevin Durant, pretty special moment in the documentary.
We definitely have an advantage.
Hold on. This is not the serious moment. This is the funny Kevin Durant moment. There's a serious moment going around that's like really touching and genuine. This is a compare and contrast on the French team versus the USA team. And Evan Fournier is the voice you're about to hear talking about how the French, one of the advantages, not that they're better than the Americans, but an advantage they have is the continuity because they play together more often.
We definitely have an advantage. We know each other. We've played together for 10 plus years. We have training camps every summer. These guys don't. These guys just show up for 3 weeks and just go play, right? It's extremely hard to create a team and create chemistry like that. And I think that's their biggest disadvantage. And that's always a challenge for them.
I could play together every day for the last 5 years. That ain't gonna help you. That chemistry gonna help you when you got guard stuff. So whoever talking, man, especially Fresh, man, just play the games, man. We ain't talking about y'all. We respecting what y'all doing over there, bro. Just play the games, bro.
That's so funny. Here's the thing. Evan Fournier's right, but so is Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. The biggest disadvantage the U.S. had is a lack of continuity. Steve Kerr, earlier in that documentary, said, we have to figure it out in 3 weeks. These other teams have been playing together for years. It's part of the reason some of these teams that, like, the gap between them is less than the talent gap. Doesn't matter when Steph Curry loses his mind. And spoiler alert, Steph Curry done lost his damn mind. And they probably edited it together that way. All right, that's our show. Linnell and the next couple. Good luck, Anthony. I'll see y'all next Tuesday from Indianapolis.